Welcome to Earth Unearthed. We are your hosts, Akash and Ruchir.
Earth Unearthed is a fortnightly podcast where we deconstruct themes from movies and TV shows to discuss the economics, politics, and science behind it. In this episode, we sit down with Srinath Muralidharan to discuss the 2011 movie Contagion in the context of the coronavirus pandemic that is plaguing the world currently. We talk about the origins of COVID-19, symptoms and transmissions, and bust some myths around it. We also deconstruct concepts like R0 and complex issues like testing and vaccine development.
But that's not it. We discuss the lockdowns and their impact on supply chains, and we also talk about, at great length, government stimulus programs and what they mean for the economy. This is part one of our conversation with Srinath. In this part, we cover origins, symptoms, transmission, and preventive measures related to coronavirus, as well as the concept of R0. Today, the guest for our podcast is L. Srinath Muralidharan. He's a batchmate of ours, mine and Richard's, at the IIT Madras. He's currently a fourth-year student in biological engineering and has interned at the National Center for Biological Sciences in Bangalore. More recently, he was a Corona scholar at the University of California, San Diego, where he worked on cancer therapeutics. Welcome to the podcast, Srinath.
Thank you for that introduction, Akash. I'm glad to be a part of this podcast.
All right. So this episode is on the 2011 movie Contagion, whose plot revolves around a pandemic caused by an imaginary virus, the MEV1. It is directed by Steven Soderbergh, who is trying to create, in his own words, an ultra-realistic film about public health and scientific response to a pandemic. The cast includes big names like Matt Damon from the Bourne franchise, Gwyneth Paltrow, Kate Winslet, Jude Law, and Lawrence Fishburne. So this movie has a very eerie similarity to the COVID crisis, and that is perhaps the reason for its newly gained popularity. By March 2020, it became the 7th most popular film on iTunes and number 2 catalog title on Warner Bros., which, compared to its 270 rank in December 2019, speaks for itself. Akash and Srinath, both of you have watched this movie. What were your first reactions?
So, the first thing that I noted, actually, apart from the eerie similarity to the coronavirus situation, definitely, I mean, that's definitely the first thing that you come across. But one more thing which was very striking to me was the similarity between the lockdowns, especially the one that happened in India and the one that they show in the movie, because India's lockdown was the strictest in the world. There have been many articles, like many research papers and many opinion articles as well. And I really enjoyed reading Ruchir Sharma's opinion article in the New York Times, where he said that the rich in India love this lockdown, but for the poor, it's totally another story. And it has pushed tens of millions of Indians below the poverty line. So yeah, that was definitely an interesting take. And I think apart from that, there are many things. I think Srinath can shed light on some of the more scientific.
Well, I too first noticed the eerie similarity with the COVID-19 pandemic. And overall, I felt that they did a decent job to portray how an actual pandemic looks like. For an ordinary movie viewer, there's a lot one could learn from the movie. I really like how they show the various ways in which the virus can spread and how you can prevent it and stuff like that. But personally, I felt that the movie wasn't scientifically sound enough and they could have done much better. There were quite a few factual inconsistencies. I mean, the film was critically acclaimed for its scientific accuracy so much, and it wasn't grossly misrepresenting the facts either, but it definitely was not the ultra-realistic film that the director claimed it to be.
Why do you think so, Srinath?
Yeah, because the first major inconsistency that I came across was that they claim that the disease has a very low incubation period and it has a very high mortality. And this actually defies the plot of the movie itself, because when a disease has such a low incubation period and high mortality, it cannot have a very high infectivity. And yet the disease actually persists for a year or two in that movie, which cannot be the case. So that is one major inconsistency that I came across.
Yes, actually, that's a good point, Srinath. I remember reading articles where they discussed why a few other viruses, like the Nipah virus, didn't actually become so contagious and was not, hadn't infect the entire world as severely as did the coronavirus. And one of the reasons they mentioned was the high mortality rate and the really low incubation period, which couldn't, you know, help spread the disease enough to make it a very, make it a global pandemic. Anyways, let's move on. Coming to the origin of the virus, of course. So in the final scene in Contagion, it is revealed that the fictional MEV virus originated from a pig that ate a piece of banana dropped by an infected bat, escaping the destruction of its palm tree forest in China. So that pig is then slaughtered and prepared by a chef who, without washing his hands, offers a handshake to Beth Hemoff, thus transmitting the virus to her. So Beth becomes the index case, meaning she was the first identified case. So Srinath, what are your opinions and what is the general thought on the origins of the coronavirus?
Well, there are a lot of myths and theories going around about the origins of this virus. One common myth is that like people in China ate bat soup and that's how they got infected and they spread it to others. I'm sure you must have come across memes on this too. But we know that the bat viruses cannot actually directly infect humans because they cannot target our proteins. SARS-CoV-2, which is the virus that infects humans, is very similar to some viruses found in the bats, but they are not identical. So direct exposure to these bat viruses actually won't cause COVID-19. Basically, what this means is that SARS-CoV-2 has evolved in some intermediate host. It jumped from bats and then to one or more animals in between, and then it jumped to humans later. And according to some theories, this intermediate host could be pangolins, but then there is no concrete evidence of that either. So as of now, we don't know the exact animal origins of this. It has not been proven yet.
All right, Srinath. But do we have any idea on where exactly did the outbreak start from? Like, it's a prevalent opinion that it started from Wuhan.
Right, yeah. Many people think that the outbreak started in Wuhan. It probably did, but we are not sure of that yet. From what we know, the first case of COVID-19 infection in humans was only reported in Wuhan. But that doesn't necessarily mean that it originated there. If you actually look at the timeline, around the same time when these initial cases were reported in Wuhan, multiple cases also started getting reported in the Guangdong province down south. And interestingly, there was no connection whatsoever between these cases in Guangdong and the wet market in Wuhan, or even for anywhere in the Wuhan city for that matter. And the viral strain which was circulating in Guangdong is also very different from the strain that was found in Wuhan. So how do you explain this? Which one came first? The Guangdong strain or the Wuhan strain? We don't know that yet. So these are unanswered questions so far, and the exact place of origin also is unknown.
Everyone kind of has almost taken it for granted that it has actually come from Wuhan, and even the name of the virus is the free nowadays. So also another question that is really popular is that, is it possible that the virus may have been engineered in a lab? Or is it just a conspiracy theory?
No, absolutely not. It is just a wild conspiracy theory. Actually, if there is one thing that has overwhelming consensus in the scientific community about this virus, then it is that it is not engineered. And there have been actually numerous studies which have analyzed both the viral sequences and some of the protein structures also. And all these studies literally point the same thing, that it is not engineered. So what is in circulation globally now is actually a wild strain, naturally occurring wild strain. But there's another interesting theory that people came up with regarding this. We know that there are two labs in Wuhan, one at the Wuhan Institute of Virology and another at some place in Wuhan, the CDC lab, the Center for Disease Control lab. And these two labs actually work on natural strains of bat coronaviruses. So it is likely that some of these strains might have leaked from one of these labs and it further went on to infect some humans. But personally, I think that this theory is also a bit of a stretch because, as I said earlier, bat coronaviruses cannot directly cause COVID-19. So for this theory to be true, this strain must have escaped the labs and entered humans, but it must also have evolved in them to specifically target human proteins. But this is not a simple process and it would take a lot of time. So this theory is also like a bit far-fetched and unproven at the moment.
All right. So it seems that the world just loves conspiracy theories, doesn't it?
So Srinath, the symptoms that COVID-19 has are very similar to, say, other flus And that's why it's very tough to, you know, identify a COVID-19 victim, especially when at the early stages. So could you tell us more about the symptoms?
Yeah. Firstly, as a disclaimer, the symptoms need not be the same for all. They can actually vary from person to person. And typically, the initial symptoms would be something mild like fever, cough, sore throat, and running nose and stuff like that. But with time, one can develop more symptoms like fatigue, body aches, vomiting, or diarrhea. And recently, loss of taste and loss of smell have also been identified as symptoms in some cases around the globe. But interestingly, these symptoms need not always appear in any particular order. There is so much variation, and that is what is really causing so much confusion. And personally, a couple that I know did not have any of these initial symptoms like fever, cough, or sore throat, and or any other symptoms like that. All they had was sneezing, and they felt very tired. And these symptoms persisted for a few days. So they got suspicious. So they got a suspicion, and they went to get tested, and turned out they were actually positive. And there are actually many other such bizarre cases. So this is confusing. But if you have any of these symptoms, then you should actually take it more seriously and approach with caution. And the most serious symptom is the shortness of breath.
So Srinath, the most of the symptoms that you listed right now, they are respiratory symptoms. So is COVID-19 a respiratory disease?
Yeah, it's actually a respiratory disease. And that's because the virus targets a protein called ACE2 in humans, and this protein is present mainly in the lung alveolar cells, and the virus sort of latches onto this ACE2 protein, which is present on the cell surfaces, and then it enters the cell and gradually infects the whole organ. That's why it's a respiratory disease. And the point of entry for this virus is also through nose and mouth, which also makes lungs an easy target. But having said that, the virus can also actually affect other organs also, because ACE2 is present in small intestine, and moderate levels of this protein is also present in liver, kidney, heart, brain, and even blood vessels, which are present throughout the body. So that's why if you see some people who are comorbid, as in those people who have other illnesses of heart and liver and cardiovascular diseases, they actually develop more symptoms with time, like heart pain, kidney pain, and liver pain as the disease progresses.
So, Srinath, tell us more about how the virus, COVID-19 virus, is transmitted, and if there is any similarity to the MEV virus that we see in the movie Contagion.
Right. The primary mode of transmission is from person to person for COVID-19. So, if you're in close contact with any infected person, then the virus can get transmitted directly when the other person talks or sneezes or coughs. But it can also spread indirectly when, like for instance, when a person touches, say, contaminated surfaces and then touches their face or nose, then that is another way through which it can spread. And these are just the primary ways or the most common ways in which the virus gets spread. But there are other ways too. Like for instance, when someone sneezes or coughs, virus particles can actually remain suspended in the air as aerosol droplets for quite a long time. And then they can travel further due to air currents. So let's say if someone is in one corner of a room and sneezes, and if a fan or AC is switched on, then due to those wind currents, the virus particles in the air could actually travel to other parts of the room, and more people in the room can get infected. And this actually happened in a hotel in China, and they noticed this, and there is a case study of this as well. Four people in one corner of the hotel had symptoms of coronavirus, but they didn't know it, and they actually went on to spread it to more people in that particular hotel room. So yeah, these are some ways in which it can get spread, and most of these are also very similar to the ways in which the MEV1 virus spreads in the movie. It also gets spread through air. So both of them are airborne illnesses.
So what are the preventive measures that one should take?
Well, actually, we have heard these so many times now that they may actually sound a bit cliche at this point, but social distancing and washing hands regularly and wearing masks are the best options that we have got at the moment. And it is important for people to realize that practicing all these three together Gridha will give the best results, because I've seen people who wear masks and go outside, but they do not care about social distancing, as if wearing masks alone would do everything and save them from getting infected. But the thing is, even if you avoid one of these three, the risk of getting infected would obviously increase, which is intuitive. So it is necessary to practice all these three together. And when it comes to social distancing, according to earlier studies, it was considered that 6 feet is roughly a safe distance to maintain. But then studies later started emerging and they pointed out that droplets could actually travel much beyond that. And 6 feet would not be enough. One particular study actually showed that these droplets could travel as much as 27 feet. And plus, as I mentioned earlier, the virus particles can also remain suspended in air, and they could cover a long distance whenever the wind blows. But practically speaking, maintaining such long distances may not always be possible whenever you're outside, like in grocery stores or even in park when you're taking a walk. That is why it is always important to wear masks whenever there is a need for you to go out. So you need to maintain that.
Yeah, especially in the context of India, because here we do, you know, get a crowd encounter whenever we go out. And despite the fact that in these testing times as well, it's really difficult to maintain a distance when you're outside. So Srinath, speaking of masks, there has been a lot of talk on whether healthy people really need to wear masks or not. Like, what do we really know regarding this? You said that we should wear masks, but is there some data?
Yeah, so that confusion was regarding the N95 masks and the surgical mask specifically, whether the general public also should wear that. And that's actually a reasonable doubt, because there would be a shortage of these essential masks for healthcare workers and other first responders if everyone starts wearing them, right? And those who know that they are infected and those who are tested positive also need to wear these masks so that they don't spread to anyone else. But coming back to healthy people, actually we must also wear these masks, because we might think that we are not infected, but we could be asymptomatic carriers, and even we could be contagious perhaps. So instead of using N95 masks or the surgical masks, what we can do is we can go for the do-it-yourself cloth masks, which can very well be made at home. And in fact, there are a lot of videos and other blog articles where they teach you how to make these do-it-yourself cloth masks, and they are actually very easy. And recently, the confusion was so widespread that recently even the WHO Director General had addressed this issue of wearing masks. And it was less than a week ago, I guess. He said that even if you're perfectly healthy, these cloth masks would offer some protection against catching the virus whenever you step outside. So even though these masks would be less effective than N95 or say surgical masks, wearing something is better than nothing. So we need to wear masks. So that is, there's no doubt about that.
Well, if you saw the movie Contagion about the virus, then you've probably heard the term R0. Well, a lot of people have in fact heard of R0 from the coronavirus, and you know, it is not just another jargon made up in Hollywood. It represents an important concept in epidemiology and is a crucial part of public health planning during an outbreak. So Srinath, what exactly is R0 and what does it signify?
Yeah, so R0 is basically the average number of people that one infected person will pass the virus on to. So it's a metric that indicates how contagious a disease is. And technically, R0 is the basic reproduction number during the onset of the pandemic when the entire population is susceptible to the virus. But then there is another term, which is the most commonly used term, called RE, or the effective reproduction number, which takes into account the modifying transmission rates and various other factors which change during the course of the pandemic. But this distinction between R0 and RE is shown only in the scientific literature, from what I've seen. In popular media, most of the articles that I've come across, they just use the term R0 or simply R for everything, which is not the case.
Oh, I see. So you said RE depends on various factors that can change during the pandemic. What are these?
Yeah, so the first factor for any such contagious disease when it comes to RE is the infectious period. That is, if someone is infected, how long will they remain contagious and spread it to other people around them? And clearly, longer the infectious period is, higher the RE will be. And for COVID-19, this value can actually, it's not a fixed value and it has a very broad range. So as long as you have the symptoms, you would be infectious and spread it to other people. But even after there are no signs of any symptoms, people have actually found that they can still remain infectious for 1 to 8 days or even for 10 days after the symptoms have gone. So it's not a fixed number, but they can be infectious for a vast range of period. So you need to be maintaining quarantine procedures even after the symptoms are not present. So that should be taken care of. And the other factor is mode of transmission of the disease. And this is essentially determines how easily the virus can spread. For instance, like if you see HIV or any other virus like that, you actually need physical contact or exchange of bodily fluids for the virus to spread, right? And it's not difficult to prevent transmission in such a case with appropriate care. But for viruses like SARS-CoV-2, it can spread very easily as it can travel through air. And this contributes to a higher RE value. And these two factors that I just mentioned are characteristics of the virus itself. They don't change during the course of the pandemic. But then there are also other factors like contact rate and the level of immunity in the population itself, which can change with time based on the human behavior and, for instance, government interventions also. Contact rate is basically the average number of people that an infected person comes into contact with. And this can change based on lockdown measures and other social distancing rules that people are following at that particular given point of time. And lower the contact rate, lower the value of RE will be. And the level of immunity is also another important factor, because if more people in the population are already immune, then the rate of transmission will come down. And as the pandemic processes, more and more people will actually get recovered and most of them will gain immunity against the virus. So there was a recent study in New York City where they randomly checked for the antibody levels in a lot of people, and they found that 20% of the population actually had antibodies in them and they did not even know that they were infected once. So unknowingly also you can develop immunity against the virus. So eventually the RE value will come down as more and more people become immune.
I see. That's pretty interesting.
So these are some of the...
So why is it really important to know this number? Even in the popular media, it's really used very often.
Well, it's actually important because the government takes the decisions based on this number, and the threshold value of RE is 1. So if the reproduction number is higher than 1, each existing infection causes more than one new infection. And then the number of cases will increase exponentially. But if R0 is less than 1, each existing infection will cause less than one infection, and so it will eventually decline and die out. And so whenever the RE is greater than 1, the government can make decisions like imposing lockdowns. And if it's very much greater than 1, the strictness of the lockdown can also depend on that. And if it's less than 1, then maybe probably the government can start relaxing those interventions. So this is basically what the purpose of knowing R0 is.
Yes. Hello. Okay, that was really interesting. So in the movie Contagion, the R0 of the MEB virus was initially 2 and then it increased to 4. So what's the R0 or even the RE value for COVID-19 currently?
Well, I'm glad that you brought this up, because this is another scientifically inaccurate thing that they show in the movie. Firstly, they use the term R0 everywhere and not RE. And for the first half of the movie, as you said, they say that this R value for the entire US is 2. And then later the pandemic shifts gears and suddenly it becomes 4. But the thing is, RE is actually not a single number. It varies from city to city and state to state. It can also vary between a large range over a given period of time. And even for a particular city or a state on a particular day, you can't calculate a fixed value. You can only estimate a rough range, because as people might think, it is not a straightforward formula where you substitute values and get the R0 value easily. it is much more complex and you actually have to make initial assumptions. And the parameters used for estimating this value are not fixed per se. And coming back to the value for COVID-19, it can actually vary from something as low as 0.5 in Hawaii to as high as 6 or 7 in certain regions of Italy or even in China during the early stages. And in India, the value, the highest value it has reached so far is around 3 and 3.3, I guess. But as of now, it has come down and it is somewhere around 1.3, but it also depends on the states. So for most states, it is somewhere around 1 to 1.5.
So Srinath, the mortality rate of the fictional MEV1 virus in the movie was around 25 to 30%. What is it for COVID-19 actually?
Well, to be honest, it is difficult to calculate the actual mortality rate during an ongoing pandemic. Because to do that, you need to know the actual number of deaths and the actual number of cases which have an outcome, like either recovered or dead. And you don't count the active cases, only the ones which have an outcome. But both deaths and the cases are grossly underreported in many places, as we know, due to shortage of testing facilities and other reasons. So in this case, what we can do is we can simply use the reported number of deaths and the reported number of cases with an outcome to calculate the mortality rate. And we call this the case fatality rate. So if we look at this CFR or case fatality rate, then it was initially estimated to be around like 1 to 2% in early Jan, during the onset of the pandemic. And during early March, the WHO announced that this value was around 3.4% globally. And as of now, as we speak, which is around mid-June now, it is around 5.5% in India, and globally it is around 9.5%. But the actual mortality rate would be much lesser, because CFR tends to overestimate the mortality rate of a disease during an ongoing pandemic.
So how do you estimate the actual mortality rate then?
You can estimate the actual number of deaths by comparing them across years during a particular period of time. So in the excess number of deaths during like say 2020 would give you the rough estimate of the actual number of deaths, and the actual number of cases can be estimated by screening for antibodies in a very large sample that represents a particular population. So because you need a very large and representative sample, you can do this only in a city, and this cannot be obviously done statewide or countrywide. So exactly this is what they did during New York recently in one of the studies. And according to that study, they found out that the actual mortality rate in New York City itself was just 1.4%, as compared to the CFR, which I just mentioned was around 9.5% globally. The actual mortality rate is actually pretty low, which is close to 1.5%.
So why is it lesser in India? Why is the mortality rate so less? It's like almost the half, right?
Right, yeah. Well, one obvious reason which could possibly explain this is that India relatively has a younger population. So maybe as a population, we are more resistant or immune to this. And also the temperate weather is more suitable for the spread of this virus as compared to our tropical weather. So that could be another possible reason. And there was also this rumor, again, this guy, BJP guy, Subramanian Swamy, had once tweeted, if you remember, saying that his researcher friend in US had found that the strains in India are relatively less lethal. But then that is just a rumor that actually is not the reason, because there have been a bunch of studies which showed that although there are some mutations in COVID-19, in coronavirus strains, none of them lead to increase in infectivity or lethality. So that just turned out to be a conspiracy theory types. And there's also another theory saying that BCG vaccine, it offers immunity against coronavirus. And a lot of people in India, of course, have taken BCG vaccine during their childhood. But then World Health Organization again clarified regarding this, saying that it is not proven yet. And there are a couple of trials going on right now, but they haven't produced any results. So we have to wait and watch what happens.
Well, nothing surprising. Subramanian Swamy is known for conspiracy theories.
Yeah.
If you liked our conversation, you could listen to the second part of this conversation right above the podcast episode that you've been listening to on the app that you get your podcasts on. In the second part, we cover regulations around testing and vaccine development, conspiracy theories around possible cures, lockdowns and their economic impact, as well as the supply chains and how to get out of this economic crisis that we are in.